This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome to Garden Better, the podcast from Better Homes and Gardens magazine. I'm Adam Woodhams.
And I'm Jenny Dillon.
We're both horticulturalists, and in each episode we'll be dishing the dirt on all things gardening, guiding you through the season and taking a look at what's hot and what's not, and how you can keep things thriving in your own little patch of paradise.
I can't wait for this episode. What's coming up?
Oh, we've got a look at one of my favourite things, which is winter flowering plants, that forgotten category of plants, the ones that give us those wonderful, wonderful colours across winter. We've got some tips on tidying up the garden and planning, and then we have a real McCoy garden expert, Nicola from Pipo Design, coming in to give us her insights into what's happening with garden design and some great tips for what to do now.
And don't forget, later on, Milton Black will be here to give us his tips for gardening by the moon. So let's get started.
Hey Jen, it's winter. It's cold.
It's freezing.
It's miserable.
Oh, God, I hate the winter.
Doesn't it look like your garden has just been steamrolled by winter?
Oh, my garden is just awful because I get so much shade. I get 5 months of shade in the wintertime.
That is a lot. But that is a problem that people encounter because we get that big change in position of the sun.
Yeah.
So suddenly what was a little bit beneficial during summer, giving you some nice shade, is suddenly your absolute worst enemy, and the lawn's in the shade and the garden beds are in the shade.
And everything's damp with all this rain.
Yes.
It's not good.
No, not good at all. But you know what gets forgotten about? There are some fantastic winter flowering plants, and they're a great way to bring your garden alive during these cold times and keep you feeling upbeat and vibey. So I have some of my faves, but why don't you tell me what some of yours are?
Well, some of my favourites are the flowering quince that comes out late winter.
That's
one of the first
forgotten
blossoms
one,
to come
isn't
out.
It?
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And they're just so startling. Gorgeous, gorgeous crimson. There's no leaves on the tree. They're totally bare. And then suddenly pop. And they come in pinks and pale pinks as well. They're really gorgeous.
It's almost biblical, isn't it? It's like the burning bush. It suddenly.
Yes, yes, it is.
Upright stems with those incredibly vibrant. It's impossible not to wow over it when
you see
it.
It is a wow plant. It
yeah,
really is.
Yeah, when you see it happening. I reckon my favourites are the camellias, the queens
yes.
of cool,
yep.
as I call them.
Queens of cool.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they are just rocking the garden when nothing else is really, really putting on a big blousy show. I mean, and that's the beauty of them. You know, you get your Sasanqueas starting all the way through in autumn, and then you get the rest of them follow through in winter and even as far as into spring. And what folks don't realise is there's actually three main camellia varieties that give you those fantastic colours. So you've got the Sasanqueas. They're the very modern contemporary one that are often used for hedging.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Japonicas, which are the classic old ones that our parents would have planted.
Mm-hmm. Parents did, yes.
Yes, yes. Lots of really brilliant hybrids with a big central boss in the flowers and often streaky flower colours, some really cool
Some of the
colours.
Patterns are just beautiful.
Oh, they're truly, truly divine. And some are almost water lily-like in the shape of the flower.
Mm-hmm.
But then the one that's not very well known is the reticulatas, and they're the very old-fashioned one. They prefer shade. They're a bit fussy on conditions. But their flowers can be up to the size of a saucer. Like, they are really, really big flowers and absolutely stunning. Bit harder to find
yes.
if you've got the right conditions.
I don't think I've seen one in my area at all.
No, you'd need to be talking to a camellia specialist to try and get hold of one, but worth investigating if you've got the right conditions because they are truly, truly spectacular.
Yeah. One of my favourites is one that looks very similar to that, and that's the fried egg tree.
Goodonia, yes, yes, yes.
Which is really – you don't see it quite so often these days. It's not sold a lot, but I reckon it should make a revival because it's like – the flowers are like the camellia – But they just, you just can't get them in the white with that beautiful, lovely yellow center.
And they're such a pure white flower too, aren't yeah. they? Yeah, with that definite yellow center to them.
But they don't go yellow on the tree. They just fall off white and they lay on the ground white. And unlike buttered toast, they land the right way up. So you just see all these fried eggs around the tree and they just look gorgeous.
They look fantastic. I can remember them as a kid and finding them very, very amusing seeing them.
Yeah.
But they're incredibly hardy too. And I think that's why, as you say, you know, worthy of a comeback, because they are a very tough and beautiful garden plant with really nice foliage. I mean, most of the time we think about camellias as having those slightly pointy oval-shaped leaves, but the Gordonias tend to have a longer leaf and are very glossy, so they're actually
very
handsome.
Yeah. And make a gorgeous tree. But you can also shape it into a sort of a protective hedge if you want to.
Well, I think that's the thing with a lot of the camellias is they do tolerate pruning extremely well. I remember years ago talking to a guy from a camellia society where they'd had a big bushfire went through his place and he had gardens full of, you know, 50-year-old camellias. And I said, oh, it must be terrible. You've lost all your camellias. And he said, nah, mate, they'll be back. Don't worry about it. they are that hardy. They'll still shoot back from the right from the base. So you can prune camellias quite hard.
Mm. Another one of my favorites is the Pieris japonica, the lily of the valley shrub.
Yes, indeed. And that's fantastic for cooler areas. You will need a spot where it is quite cool or shady if you're in a warmer sort of zone. It's one of those ones that the warmer you get, the more shaded you want to perform well. But the flowers are just, they look like porcelain, don't they? Just little hanging.
Well, they remind me of a bridal veil, you know, really lacy. And actually they're really popular in bridal bouquets as well.
Yes, absolutely. They are absolutely beautiful. And the orchids, the cymbidiums, they're a winter flower, I think more people have orchids than realize they have orchids, because they seem to be one of those plants that gets passed from family to family to family. You know, your folks moved out of their home and they left you these couple of pot plants of strappy-leaved plants and you got no idea what they are.
No idea.
Well, they may actually be orchids.
Yes.
But they put on a great show at this time of year.
I've got a neighbour who's got a paved courtyard at the front of her garden, and she's just put pots and pots and pots of cymbidians, and you can just sort of feel you're just ready for them to explode.
Yeah, they're amazing, and surprisingly, you can put them not so much in the ground, but on the ground if you have the right sort of shady spot that gets warm enough during summer without getting hot. You can put them in, put a big mound of orchid bark, just the same way you would like a mulch, and you can actually plant into that. And they will do quite well in the garden as long as their roots don't get wet or stay wet. But my absolute favourite at this time of year is the clivias. They are beautiful, aren't they?
Oh, they are stunning.
Do you say clivia or clivia?
Clivia.
Clivia. Yes, I say clivia.
It's named after the wife of one of the Clives of India.
And funnily enough, when you look in textbooks, sometimes it's spelt with an I, sometimes with an E. So it is a bit confusing and you can be allowed to call it either.
Of course
but
you can.
Everybody knows clivias for their beautiful orange blooms, that gorgeous strappy foliage all year round. They love the shade. They absolutely thrive in the shade. But we were talking about this off air before. It's not just orange. There's all salmons and greens and creams
and stunning yellows
and open flowers. And
the colours are sort of like luminescent. Do you know, like psychedelic even. They just really, really pop, don't they?
And, well, particularly because they're happening, you've got that dark green foliage, then you've got this incredibly vibrant orange or cream or whatever the colour range may be in front and above that dark green foliage and often happening in a shady spot. If you've got a shady corner, they will just absolutely bring that spot to life. So they're a fantastic one for a winter garden colour splash. And what about anything else? Anything else you can think of now?
Any of the proteas, a lot of the banksias as well coming out?
Many of the natives, yes, which is fantastic, and it provides lots and lots of food for our feathered friends during winter, because foraging can be very difficult for them at this time of year. So the grevilleas and banksias and things like that can be fantastic to have in the garden for some winter foraging for birds and other little animals at night. So, yeah, they're a fantastic one. And they look gorgeous too, of course.
I mean, I love the proteas. Simply, I mean, they're not Australian natives. They're from South Africa. But they sort of add sort of architecture to the garden as well. They look like statues, they're so long lasting.
Absolutely. And fabulous cut flower too, of course. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we can wrap up our winter flowering talk without talking about the trumpet creeper or the flame creeper, the Pyrostegia venusta.
Yes.
It is just absolutely spectacular, is it not?
Oh, it's stunning. That just cascade of orange against the, you know, the little green leaves. They just look fabulous. You know, you put them by a fence and they'll just go berserk. They just love wire fences,
and
especially.
And the number of flowers too. I liken them to being the way when you see the fireworks off the Harbour Bridge in Sydney, the big cascade. It's like a cascade that looks like that in vibrant orange.
And it
orange.
Is like
just
a fireworks,
fantastic.
Isn't it?
It
just
is,
sort of
absolutely.
Explodes all over. Wonderful.
Yes. So winter in the garden.
Not bad
that
at all.
Quiet at all, is it? You're listening to Garden Better from Better Homes and Gardens magazine. I have always been a fan of winter in the garden. I've got to admit, I do. It's just there's something about it. I know the garden can look terrible and tired and everything else, but there's not that sense of urgency to do things.
No, there isn't any urgency. And also you get to see the garden naked. I mean, not you, but the garden is naked. It's lost a lot.
No one should be seen naked in the garden. That's just wrong.
But I love looking at the bare bones of the trees and everything. They just, you know, suddenly you realize, oh my God, there's a bark there.
Yeah, the wonderful framework, particularly I'm a big fan of Japanese maples, and that's one of the reasons I love them is that during the warmer months you get, you know, that incredible kaleidoscopic effect from the different colors as they have their spring color, then they bed down to their summer color, then they get their autumn color. But then all the leaves drop away and you get this wonderful framework, you know, that you just didn't even realize was there. So, you know,
My favorite's the silver birch.
Yes.
It's
truly beautiful.
That's a special one for people who live in cooler climates, and the gorgeous, gorgeous silver trunk with those stripes of black, like little blisters coming out. They're fantastic, aren't they?
Yeah, the lovely, lovely colour. You just want to reach out and touch them. It makes for a very beautiful textural landscape. And it gives you that real feeling of change too, doesn't it? That seasonal change. But it's a great time to be getting stuff done. You know, you can see things through a different lens because everything is bare. You can more easily see things like where people have been using the garden and how they've been using the garden. So it gives you that opportunity to have a bit more of an overview about what you're going to do with ideas for changing your layout. You know, I remember hearing them called years ago desire paths, you know, that we put our gardens together and we say, okay, well, everybody's going to walk this way and they're going to follow
and
this
then
little
they don't.
Path. And then they don't. Don't fight the tide. You know, it's a great time to be turning that desire path into a proper pathway and reorganizing the garden around that. There's a lot of simple things you can do for prepping the garden for spring too, of course. You know, it's I know it's winter, but there's still spring prep stuff you can do that will be of great benefit that – and it's not so much hard work. I think this is the biggest point, that some of those projects that you might want, if you've been thinking about a deck or a paved area or something like that, thinking about building that during summer, forget it, just too hard. But during winter, it actually becomes a lot more of a pleasant task to do.
It can be cold in wintertime, but, I mean, doing all those outside projects really, really does warm you up. And I think it's so important to get out in the sun, whatever the temperature.
Yes, well, they say you get your vitamin D, don't you?
Yes, you do.
It helps with that sort of down feeling we get during winter. So, no, I'm 100%. I love getting out in the garden and working during winter. But also, we mentioned trees and maintenance before too. It is a good time to be doing a bit of pruning on some of those deciduous trees. But with you, as you mentioned, they're very open. You can see a lot of things you can't normally see within the tree. You can suddenly find out that you've got some borer on some internal branches. So it's a great time to be getting out there and pruning this sort of stuff off. And a big one that people don't realize causes a major issue and in fact can lead to problems like borer is where you get crossing and rubbing branches. So have a look up into the framework of your tree, and if you've got a couple of branches that are crossing over, take off the one that's either the most damaged or is the most spindly, so that can avoid all sorts of disease problems further down the track.
Well, if you're going to be trimming and pruning, I think also it's a good time to trim back your perennials. The time is right for that if you haven't already. It's just to get them ready for when they burst into growth in springtime.
Well, it makes them much more dramatic, doesn't it? Rather than bursting up through a rosette of dead leaves from last season, they're coming up with this vibrant foliage all of their own. So absolutely fantastic time to be doing it. And what about getting rid of some of the old stuff in the veggie garden? Of course, there's some things are probably just on the downhill at the moment, and there's not much point in trying to resuscitate them. So worth pulling out that old stuff in the veggie garden and even fluffing a bit of compost through the soil.
Yeah, and digging up the soil again.
Yes.
I think it's so important. It's a great time of the year to be doing that.
It is.
Get ready for all those lovely spring and summer veggies.
And, of course, the caveat on that, though, is you don't want to, if the soil's very wet, you don't want to be going digging it too much, and particularly
especially not if
compost
it's clay,
through it.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Look, another one of the reasons that I love the winter garden is anyone that knows me knows that I will actively seek opportunity to do absolutely nothing at all. Doing nothing is very underrated, let me tell you. I think it's a wonderful thing. It allows you lots of headspace to do your thing. And winter gives you that time where you've got all the excuse you need in the world to sit out there in the garden and seek some inspo. Flick through your latest copy of Better Homes and Gardens for some fantastic design inspo. And have a think about the projects that you might want to look at to do either now while it's cooler or as we head towards spring. And I thought, what better way to get some inspiration on projects and ideas and talk to a real McCoy designer? We have with us Nicola Cameron, who is a director and designer at Pipo Botanic Design. Welcome, Nicola. Pipo, the tagline is design gardens that inspire, connect and restore. I absolutely love it. I reckon that nails what gardens should be for everyone.
Thanks, Adam. Yeah, we've chosen that because of, well, they've all got double meaning. So inspire, we want to draw people outside. We often, when we meet clients for the first time, their garden's a mess, they're overwhelmed, they've, you know, it might be really unhealthy or overgrown, or it might even be a complete blank canvas. So firstly, it's inspiring the homeowners to really see the vision that you can and see the potential in the garden. So inspiring people to be plant and garden lovers is kind of the key to what we're trying to do with inspiration. Connect, connect again has a bit of a double meaning. You can connect the inside to the outside and really draw people into those spaces outside where what it might be a living space or a dining area. Connecting those plants, we're loving indoor plants at the moment and seeing that indoor foliage and then the outdoor foliage. But also in this technology-rich world, connecting people to the outdoors and immersing them in nature, and it's vitally important, and what a better way than to do this in their own gardens.
Yeah, well, that's what we were talking before we came on air about so many people these days are into their screens, and that's where they seem to spend half their time. And I think the logic can be on your screen, but why don't you be on your screen in your garden surrounded by something beautiful, you know, because the reality is I don't think we're going to get people off their screens, but we may as well give them beautiful environments to be in. Interesting you mention indoor plants too, because I've noticed in my years in the industry, we often used to have the outdoor room, you know, it was discussed as being the extra room to the house, but now there's much more of a seamless transition. So the indoors flows smoothly to the outdoors, and you almost don't notice when you step from one area to another. And indoor plants are a fantastic way to achieve that, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. There's some beautiful vessels to put them in. There's some amazing pots out there that have got history and patina and just look fabulous. So you can really connect it not just with the planting but with your materials as well. So we're loving seeing lots of indoor plants, and also, of course, the health benefits of indoor plants. They're cleaning the air, the soil's giving oxygen through into the rooms. You know, there's multi layers of those indoor plants.
Well, that's a fascinating thing, isn't it? When they first started studying indoor plants, they thought, oh, it's all about the actual normal biological function of the plant. And then they thought, hang on, this doesn't actually add up. And they found a lot of it was all that fabulous beneficial bacteria and everything in the soil were the things that were contributing to scrubbing the air and making everything nice and clean, which is it's fascinating, isn't it? Now, apart from plants and those beautiful planters, what are some other hot trends that you're seeing at the moment?
So I'm seeing lots of, as you say, that sort of indoor-outdoor journeys, those big sliding doors. Bifolds are probably more out at the moment, but really sliding the doors back and extending those indoor spaces, which is always fabulous. Fire pits are really in at the moment as well, which I kind of I think that's just such a great thing. We don't have one ourselves. We have an indoor fire, but we went to a friend's place the other couple of weeks ago and just sat around this fire pit, and we cooked the steaks on the fire pit and looked up at the stars, and it was just the most beautiful evening. And meaning that you don't have to go camping for the weekend. You can go over to your friend's place and have Sunday night around the fire pit. So they're really big, and I think they're going to continue to be, which is a great way to draw people outside in the evening. Garden lighting's big as well. Everybody's sort of feeling that they can, with those fire pits and those outdoor experiences, also use great little things like festoon lights, which hang from pergolas and trees and canopies and things like that. As far as colours go, green is a colour that's in furnishings and fittings in the interior design world. So we're loving that because obviously green's a big colour outside, and that can be a connection between the indoors and the outdoors. Lots of natural materials, stones, sandstone, bluestone, crazy paving's back, which is a bit of fun. In all sorts of different forms, so some beautiful bluestone, crazy paving. And that's meaning that the edges of lines are kind of blurred too, so gardens kind of coming into paved areas, plants spilling over.
Well, and the beauty of that too is those irregular type of shapes, they in fact can make it a lot better in a smaller space, because you can get a feeling of a bigger space. When you have unitary paving in standard sizes, your typical normal paver, you do tend to get a very regimented feeling of size. But, yeah, you lose that, don't you, in a small space in particular, once you start going for that randomised look with crazy paving.
Absolutely, and it means that you can just pocket little plants in amongst the paving and things like that, so it can really soften a space and cool a space as well.
Yeah. Now, what do you reckon? What are some simple projects? Because we've been talking before about how it's a good time of year to be doing some really easy, simple things that people can accomplish themselves. What do you reckon are some good things that people can knock off at this time of year without too much hassle and too much expense?
So there's a few things that you can do as far as design goes. There's certainly, again, we're talking about the indoor plants, what a great thing to do on those winter weekends when you don't really want to go outside, but purchasing a nice big pot that's really spectacular and popping that into the corner with there's lots of big leaf foliage that'll do really well inside. So I think that's a great project. I really also think that obviously soil is the everything for a garden. So improving soil in the winter is a great thing to do. So topping up with compost and cow manures and things like that, and then mulching. So I think they're two great jobs, and it's always a time for decluttering. So throwing out all those old plastic pots, or, you know, pots that are holding on to too much water, or the plants that have died, or even, you know, repotting the plants that sort of need a bit more of a new life.
Yeah, sometimes you have to face that fact that that plant you've been trying to resuscitate for the last 2.5 years, it just isn't ever going to come good, is it?
No, or maybe it just needs some love.
Maybe it needs the right type of love, and sticking it in a corner and ignoring it was not working very well. Yeah,
absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
And, I mean, that was a couple of great tips on winter maintenance. Have you got another one? What would you think is a nice, neat one that people can do to get their garden ready for spring so they can be out there enjoying it?
Well, I think, as you've mentioned, the shaping plants, it's a fabulous time to really be critical. In fact, in design, they often say take a photo of your garden in put a black and white setting on it so you can really see the shapes and the forms. Winter's a great time to do that. You don't even need to take the photo, really, because there's some grey old days. So you can really look at those forms, look at the foreground, look at the background, look at the height, shaping deciduous trees, making sure that they're balanced in the landscape. Doing all of that pruning, is winter's a perfect time to do that. But also always check, make sure that the plant's not about to flower or it's coming into its flowering time. So do a little bit of research that can be done in a nice warm room, and then go out and into the winter and get stuck into it.
Well, and that's a good point too, is that there's a lot of plants that do take very well to pruning that people may not realise. So if they do a little research, they might be surprised to find they've got some stuff that'll be very easily trimmed into shape or taken into a nice new form, and lifting canopies, even simple things like that can do wonders at this time of year. Well, look, thank you very much for your time, Nicola, and people can see more of your work at Pipo Botanic Design, pipo.com.au, and make sure you check out the pics of the beautiful Queen's Park Pool Garden. I am just totally crushing on that wall of reclaimed Italian terracotta tiles. It is just gorgeous.
Oh, thank you, Adam. It's been fun.
Gardening by the Moon with Milton Black.
Hi, Milton. How are you?
Oh, very well, Jenny. And yeah. What an exciting sort of a week we're going to have this week for the garden, because it's maintenance time. It really is good maintenance time. And I hope everyone's got their secateurs sharpened up and their spades sharpened and all getting ready with their compost heaps to spread the compost and do the fertilising and cutting the lawns and all that sort of thing too, because you don't need to really cut the lawns much in the winter coming in. But this is a great week for these sort of things. But if we have a look at Monday, the 24th, of course, we've got the moon in Pisces. And that's a very, very fertile sign. So we have the below ground planting, anything like your onions and potatoes, seed potatoes can go in there too at this stage, your radishes, anything that grows below the ground. So, and don't forget, you can put bulbs in still. You've still got a little bit of time to put those bulbs
that's
in.
That's right, yes.
And they can be done too during that particular period. But then the moon goes into Aries, and it's the last quarter of the moon. Now, that's a no-no for planting. You can pot around your garden and get things ready for a big week of garden maintenance, because there's no real good planting that's going to happen from the 25th running right through until I would say Tuesday, the 2nd of July. Right. Now, what's happening there, the moon is going into hiding. So it's going into the last quarter before it comes up to a new moon, which is on the Wednesday, the 3rd of July. So from virtually Wednesday, the 26th, right through until the 3rd of July, all you do is garden maintenance. Now, this is an excellent time to get all that spraying done around the place. Those that want to use their spray, you look for your leaf over your lemon trees and things like this. All your plants that need spraying, it's an ideal time to do it. It's also an excellent time to spread your compost and also to fertilise. And don't forget that, you know, some lettuce and things like that need a little bit of nitrogen occasionally. So you mix up a good fertiliser with a bit of nitrogen for them, and potassium, particularly for the below-ground crops as well. Mm. But it's excellent. Just the whole week is going to be really time off for planting, but time in for maintenance. And I do think that things like your raspberries, your rhubarb too, but it's excellent for sort of just doing your garden maintenance. And I think you'll find too that during this particular cycle, lawns can be done too. Now, if you mow your lawns when the moon is dying down to that new moon coming up in July on Wednesday the 3rd, so you've got all that week, for some reason or another, the lawns don't seem to grow as quickly when you mow them when the last quarter of the moon's in there. That's the best time to mow. And just remember to lift your mower up a little bit because the growth is slow. But I do feel it's excellent for that sort of thing. Now, also for your spraying, I find that on my hibiscus, which is still going profusely where I live at the moment.
Oh, well done.
I find if I get any little bugs on there, I just use a dishwashing liquid, mix it up, and spray it all over the hibiscus. And that sends the little fellas off left, right, and centre. And I don't have to have that nasty sprays around. It's all sort of natural stuff. But if you want to really put some heavy sprays on your trees and things, your lemon trees and things of that nature, well, of course, you've got to use the appropriate sprays. Now, from Thursday the 4th of July, here we've got now the moon entering into Leo, and then it moves into Virgo on Saturday and Sunday. still not the best times for planting, but on Saturday and Sunday of the 6th and 7th of July is an excellent time for transplanting again. And also you can put your bare-rooted trees in on those 2 days of the 6th and 7th. So over that weekend, you can do a little bit of transplanting, no vegetable planting, and you can put a few flowers in if you wish over that period, but it's not what I'd class as the most fertile time. I would leave it till the following week. But really, I would say you can have a bit of a holiday, gardeners.
Oh, good.
And don't forget you can potter around there and do a little bit of weeding. I know people don't like weeding. I hate weeding, but I do it. And I find that if I do it at that time of the year and the month, especially during that period of the 26th, of June running through to the 3rd of July, you'll find that your weeds die very quickly, and also you don't have to worry too much about them coming up quickly because the moon's right at the dead part of the moon, and consequently the weeds hate that and they die very quickly.
Good.
So there you go. Now also, Jen, I've got a little tip for you. Now, you know, sometimes fruit trees can be a real pain, especially older trees and especially trees that don't sort of fruit anymore. So, you know, you look at it and you say, shall I rip that tree out? No, 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 no. You don't have to rip that tree out at all. You just get a nice big 4-inch nail and hammer it into an angle of 45 degrees just above the ground. And all of a sudden the tree sort of feels as though it's a female and it's likely to fertilize itself. And if you fertilize and water well and have that nail in there at a 45-degree angle just above the ground, and you'll find that all of a sudden the tree thinks it's a female and it'll start fruiting again in time.
I've heard that story, but not quite the way you've told me.
Yes, that's right. So it's quite interesting. And the best time to hammer the nail into the tree is when the moon is in the third quarter. So the third quarter is just after the full moon, from the full moon down to the next new moon. It doesn't hurt the tree then, you see, so much. And preferably if it's in a fertile sign like Cancer, Scorpio, Pisces, Capricorn or Taurus, you'll find that you will get fruit on that tree at a later date.
Well, who knew that trees could be transgender? That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's right. It's transgender trees. And it's very interesting.
Fantastic.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Milton. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, darling.
Well, that was a great episode, don't you think, Jenny?
Yes, I do. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with more Garden Chat. But in the meantime, Adam, where can people find you?
Oh, the best way is to just search me up on YouTube. Put Adam Woodhams into YouTube and I'll pop up. Not the guy that does the fast fours and rotaries. I'm the guy that does gardening and landscape and all sorts of DIY stuff.
Fantastic. And if they want more garden inspiration before the next episode, follow us on Instagram at BHGAUS.
Thanks, Jenny. See you next time.
Sure. See you then.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.